forget about tomorrow, Neil Sedaka. And if our next guest had anything to do with that, he'd be in studio when Neil Sedaka was hanging out with us. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Richard Weiss, Dick Weiss, ladies and gentlemen, from WeissWrite.com. He's also a 30-year editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, 20 years at the Metro Desk. Dick, welcome to the show, my friend.
Neil Sedaka, big, big favorite of mine. Neil Diamond, too. I used to, down in Florida, my wife and I went to see a Neil Diamond impersonator. We couldn't get the real thing.
You know,
at the Ramada Inn. What a show.
I bet he was great.
What a lounge act.
Did you get the early bird special?
Absolutely.
You know, say what you want, but the word impersonator is now out.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. They're now called tribute bands.
Oh, that's much nicer.
Right. Yeah. So you saw a Neil Diamond tribute band.
Yes, I did.
Right, and, yeah, right, yeah. Exactly, which is very different. Which
Sweet Caroline. And
it's cool. It's cool to see a tribute band. It's lame to see an impersonator.
Yes.
Does it make any sense?
Yes.
Right.
Impersonators, I mean, it kind of almost implies like cross-dressing and things like
right,
that.
Right, yeah, yeah, it's wrong. Right, right. Like I go see a Elvis tribute.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go see an Elvis impersonator.
Right, and usually, isn't it guys that do Bette Midler?
Mm-hmm. And Cher.
Yeah, and Cher, yeah. So.
Did you just say guys do Bette Midler?
Uh-huh. I did.
Yeah. We might want to dump that.
Should I issue an apology now?
Only in your mind, McGraw.
All right, tell us the story. I missed this story. This shows you what happens when you go on vacation. Tell me about the Telemundo anchor in Los Angeles.
Well, there is a mayor of Los Angeles is Antonio Villagrosa. I hope I pronounced that right. I actually went to a website where you can go hear names pronounced. And right. I think I got it right. Anyway, he's the mayor of Los Angeles, and he's led quite a interesting love life, and he's been married for some number of years, and his marriage was on the rocks. It was apparent because he was no longer showing up with his wife at public events, and his wedding ring was missing, and reporters were asking him about it, and finally he announced that his marriage was breaking up, and the anchor on Telemundo,
which is a Spanish-speaking station.
Spanish-speaking station, right. And her name is Mirtala Salinas. She's the anchor, and she announced this as a news item.
Did she break the story?
No. I sent you a note. I had that wrong. The mayor announced it.
Okay.
But, you know, she comes on the air and with a straight face tells her viewers what's going on. Well, it turns out that Mirtala was the other woman.
Dun, 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 dun.
Got a little too close to her source.
So she was the one who broke up the marriage.
You know, I don't think that there are any court documents that explicitly state that, but yeah, it was a troubling issue in the marriage.
And
from
so
all accounts.
She's on the air saying the mayor of St. Louis is getting a divorce.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
That one should be. Let's dump that one.
Oh,
hit the bleep button.
The mayor of Los Angeles is getting a divorce. However, yes. Never mentioning
no,
I'm the one having an affair with him.
Yes, and then the Los Angeles Daily News runs a story on this. I think they broke it around July 3rd, just in time for the holiday and for the fireworks. And she has since been taken to task. Actually, there's more upset and controversy over what she did. Going on the air and acting as if she didn't have a relationship with this, with the mayor, then the mayor actually having an affair. I mean, that's no big deal anymore. And, the mayor has apparently had several, dalliances, and, she has had some with other public figures in Los Angeles over the years. Now, in her, defense, she has, she said that she had
really
gone to her bosses and said she didn't want to cover politics anymore several months ago. And as near as I can tell, she hasn't done much of it. But they did have her on the air announcing that the mayor had broken up with his wife.
Is that a fireable offense?
Well, I think it is, except that it normally would be, except that they're aware that she had a relationship with the mayor, but they didn't do anything about it or make any moves. And then She's embarrassed. So right now she's on leave from her anchor post.
Speaking of that, the woman from Omaha who was found to be giving money to a Democratic candidate, remember that?
Yes.
That,
yeah, we talked about
who went to Columbia, actually. She was fired. She was fired a couple days later.
For disclosing it. Wasn't she pictured on Facebook with the arm around the candidate?
That's the one. Yeah, she was since fired. So anyway, all right. Your buddy Keith Olbermann is in the news, making some people are talking about his show Countdown with Keith Olbermann. He called for Bush to resign.
Yes, he went on last week again, July 8th of July, calling on Bush to resign after he pardoned Scooter Libby's sentence, and it was it seemed like a good 10-minute rant about and well written, well done, I thought.
Olbermann is a good writer.
He's a terrific writer, but it just made me think about this whole notion of these folks who sit at a desk and deliver the news in the way that Walter Cronkite used to or David Brinkley, and they surround themselves with the aura and the trappings of doing solid, straightforward journalism, but mostly what they're doing is delivering opinion. And I think that, and also in an entertaining way, I'm often entertained by what Olbermann does and some of the others, but I think it's beginning to blur the lines between news and entertainment, and I felt like as I'm watching this call for Bush's resignation that it was sort of a calculated move. We're into the holiday period. Let's see what we can do to juice the ratings. I'll call for his resignation. I'll be the first one to do it. And when newspapers do things like that on their editorial page, which is very distinct from the news pages, it's a big deal. Now I feel like it's just another act in the big top.
Well, don't you think, though, that the audience knows the difference between Keith Olbermann's opinion and fact?
Well, I like to think so. I like to see happen is that, as you get older and a little bit more sophisticated, you can tell the difference between what Charlie Gibson is doing on ABC News and what Olbermann is doing, or Bill O'Reilly for that matter. But what I'd love to see is, I'd say around fifth grade, show kids the difference. I remember having a little, journalism or civics lesson around that time where we'd read an editorial and we'd read a straight news story and we'd talk about what the difference was. Now there are so many gradations, and I would love to have kids have a class where they'd see all these different kinds of shows, and the kids would be taught, here's where you're getting the straight news, no opinion, and here's where it's becoming tinged, and here's where it's just there for entertainment value, and really teach kids how to consume information.
The New York Times has this thing, and they call it a news analysis. Is that opinion? I mean, it is, isn't it?
I think it's something between news and opinion. I think that the writers in an analysis piece, for instance, on Bush's commutation of Libby's sentence, wouldn't say that he did what he did was wrong. The analysis would say that it was it was a departure from the way Bush had handled commutations and pardons in the past, and that would be an analytical piece. Now, it may lead you to draw a conclusion, but it doesn't. An opinion piece actually reaches the conclusion for you.
Right, and I think I agree with you to some extent in that Keith Olbermann calls for his resignation. Well, are we really shocked by that? If Charlie Gibson got up there and called for his resignation, that's the story.
All right. You remember when Walter Cronkite went on the air and finally said, it's not working in Vietnam. It was a big moment in our history.
But in the way the world is run today, if Walter Cronkite would say that today, he'd be vilified as a liberal. And if he did it during a Democratic administration, he'd be vilified as a Bill O'Reilly.
Probably.
So, yeah. The most trusted man in the world used that trust, sat behind the desk, and gave us his opinion.
That's true. And I think what the difference is that a straight news guy will go years and years without ever issuing an opinion.
Right.
And then when he does, it means something. Keith, this thing that Keith Olbermann did was called a special comment, okay? And it was promoted that way heavily. I mean, I don't think there were any advertisements where Walter Cronkite did his thing. Well, Keith Olbermann, I looked on his website, has had like 12 special comments in the last, I don't know, several months.
Well, it's so interesting.
I mean, even the meaning of special has kind of gone away.
No, you're absolutely right.
Well, in the years when I was on television, usually the station manager or the news director would come on and right. give the station commentary where the station stood, but never, ever your main news anchor.
Right, and usually they put you to sleep.
Quite frankly,
exactly.
I think in some weird way, I'd like to see more comments and more personal opinions from news anchors.
Well, it would be interesting, but I think it would diminish their credibility ultimately, because then you'd say, well, I'm not getting, where can I go get straight, accurate, credible information? What's my source anymore?
Right.
And so I'd hate to see Charlie Gibson give that up.
Well, I think people question that now, though. Mm. There are people who only read what they want to believe, or believe only what they want to read. There are a lot of people who don't read the New York Times just because they don't believe it.
Yeah, right. They believe it's tainted. And the New York Times did a number of things over the years
to destroy that
credibility.
Yeah. A lot of talk about the Fairness Doctrine coming back to radio. And there's been talk that a lot of Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, are all upset because there are too many conservative voices on talk radio. And lo and behold, they have a Republican sympathizer in former Majority Leader Trent Lott.
Yes, strange bedfellows to be sure. And Trent Lott was in favor of the immigration bill that didn't make it, which was talked about on conservative talk radio and opposed by many people, Rush Limbaugh among them. And Trent Lott said, well, maybe we ought to bring back the Fairness Doctrine, which I think is a bad idea in this case. A study showed that most of talk radio, at least the national, widely syndicated folks, are conservative, 90%. And to be sure, it can be oppressive, but there's so many places you can go now to get the other side.
Right.
This doesn't seem...
I think that's a red herring. That's a giant, I don't know what you call that, but that's just it's never going to come back. It didn't work. It was a disaster. It was really boring. Talk about those opinion pieces that
right.
the station managers did. The Fairness Doctrine was ridiculous. Because you would get someone talking about how murder is bad, then you'd have to get somebody on talking about how murder is good. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Right. And, you know, if you wanted to pursue the Fairness Doctrine, you'd have to have my wife on.
And we certainly don't want that.
I don't want that.
He doesn't want that, yeah.
No. What's the best story we've never read?
The best story you've never read is if when you were growing up, did you have a corner pharmacy in your neighborhood?
McClellan's.
You went?
Yes,
McClellan's,
we did.
And
yeah.
you could, you know, the pharmacist knew you, and
that's right.
And he'd be watching you very closely because he knew you were a little shoplifter, and you'd be taking the Bonomo's Turkish taffy.
As a matter of fact, Uncle Charlie would send me to McClellan's to buy him a pack of Marlboro Reds.
Oh,
and I would be 10. And they would say, is this for you? No, this is for my Uncle Charlie. Okay, great. And I'd buy a pack of baseball cards and buy a pack of cigarettes for him.
That's right. Can you still get cigarettes at a pharmacy? That almost seems like a contradiction in terms.
Okay.
But anyway, we digress. The Washington Post, Dale Ruskoff, did a wonderful piece about Sherry Garvin and her Leesburg pharmacy, Leesburg, Virginia, where you can go in and if your kid has a tummy ache, they'll mix up some special medicine. It'll taste like peaches and cream or pina colada or pineapple, whatever it is, and the kid can even taste it before you take the medicine home. And they have a home remedy kind of diaper rash thing called Robert's butt paste. Can I say that on the air? It's a four-letter word. And just a wonderful piece. It'll hit a lot of nostalgia chords for people, but it's also an interesting analysis of why the corner pharmacy can no longer survive in the United States, and what we gain. We certainly realizing some control over the cost of prescription medicines through mail order and the competition between chain pharmacies, but we lose a lot by not having that little, that's almost like a little community center on the corner anymore. It didn't say, though, that they sold ice cream sodas or milkshakes. And that's what my corner pharmacy did.
The old sarsaparilla. All right, so we can read that story from the, was that the Washington
Post? That's in the Washington Post. You can find it on Weisright.com, a link on Weisright.com, along with all the ones that we've done, we've talked about in the past.
You got it.